Justice Judy Cates is joining me this morning, Supreme Court candidate on the Fifth Appellate Court. Is that right, Judy?
That's correct.
Good morning. How you been?
I've been great, Tom. How about you?
Good. But I know campaigning couldn't be easy.
Well, it's kind of difficult these days.
Right. I mean,
starting to move around, so it's really encouraging.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the proverbial kissing of babies and shaking of hands is out of question at this point. I mean, when Kentucky Fried Chicken says we're dropping the slogan "finger licking good" because we don't think it's the appropriate time, let alone campaigning.
Well, I haven't been able to meet people like I would have wanted to, but people are starting to respect social distancing and going out to the parks and having some golf tournaments and things like that. So, yeah, we're starting to move around, and it's encouraging.
You know, these races for Supreme Court, it doesn't matter which court it is, but Supreme Court most of all in the state of Illinois. These are profound roles that you play in stewardship for the community, right? And an increasingly profound, I think, the high court's role in what they play in today's world. One of them is COVID-19 when you look at the Supreme Court and court rulings when it comes to the governor and things along that line. But the high court's role, I think, has become even more profound recently.
Well, I think the Illinois Supreme Court's role is not only profound in deciding questions that affect all of Southern Illinois, but it also changes the landscape for all the people of Southern Illinois, because your Supreme Court justice gets to appoint judges throughout the district. A lot of people don't understand that. In the last 16 years, while we've had this sitting justice, over 44 judges have been appointed throughout Southern Illinois.
Now, that's interesting. And you know, that role in appointing those judges, you're right, that is really important.
Oh, yeah. I mean, every district, every courthouse in the 37 counties that I represent will have judges that are retiring. In fact, you have one opening right now in Williamson County. And that may not be filled until this race is over.
Yeah, important job. How long have you been on the bench, Judge? Justice?
It's okay. Judge is fine. I've been on the bench since 2012 when the people of Southern Illinois elected me to the appellate court.
What have you learned in 12 years on the bench about human beings and the law?
You know, I've learned that people are impacted just as greatly by the decisions I make as a judge as when I was an attorney and a prosecutor. Whenever you make a decision that affects somebody's lives, there's a ripple effect not only into that family but into the community. And you know, Tom, I spent over 30 years as a lawyer representing people, and I was a prosecutor. So I wanted to write the law on the other side of the bench, but my understanding of people is basically confirmed, and that is we need to protect all the people of Southern Illinois.
You know, it's interesting. I learned something from you last time you and I spoke, and I still haven't fully processed it, I think, because I've become so accustomed in interviews like this of staying away from certain subjects in certain contexts. Because predisposition, and, you know, people can then listen back to this recording on the internet and say, look, the judge said this. And, you know, the last time you and I were talking, you said, look, you know, it changed in many respects because the law now recognizes a judge's First Amendment rights to be able to talk about these subjects.
That's right. It took the Illinois Judges Association a little poke from me to get that changed, because they're handbook for judges up until this election even said that judges couldn't comment, and yet there was a U.S. Supreme Court case back in 2002 that said our First Amendment rights say that we can, as long as we're a candidate. Now, obviously, we can't get into particular details of a case that hasn't been briefed before us, but our own personal opinions can be voiced. We do have a voice.
And I think that's interesting in particular because I've seen you exercising this most profoundly when it comes to Second Amendment in Illinois.
Yes. In fact, I did a whole podcast on it on my website, which is VoteJudgeJudy.com, because I wanted the people to know that I had a voice on this. I have been shooting a gun since I'm 12. and, you know, I own some property in Washington County, and my husband's a hunter, my father-in-law is a hunter, my boys are hunters, and so I wanted to assure the people of Southern Illinois that I believe in the Second Amendment. I'm not just a Johnny-come-lately here to get elected, but this is part of who I am and who my family has always been.
But, you know, the interesting thing about this, and hunters' rights and guns' rights are an issue, but the reason the Second Amendment there is not for hunting, it's for tyranny.
Absolutely. In fact, the Founding Fathers recognized that people needed to have long-barreled guns so that when the king decided to come back, they could get their militia gathered, and whether they be farmers or whomever, they could all join together and fight tyranny. You're exactly right.
You know, and that's, I mean, and I think this gets glossed over. Well, it may be a distraction because, well, it's so important to us from a cultural standpoint. Go hunting with your mom and dad, and right, and fishing and having the fun and all that. But there's a much more serious role. And I think even more profoundly illustrated after watching the last some 3 months of watching what's going on in the street of Illinois, and this country, I should say, and people running to the gun stores and getting even more FOID cards because they're worried about defending their family. And you know, not tyranny, but self-defense.
Yes, and we do have self-defense as a affirmative defense in Illinois in the criminal system. But, you know, I have to say I've visited 2 gun stores myself since all of this happened, one in Pinckneyville recently and one in Harrisburg. Plus, I was at a gun range. So, I know it's scary times for everybody, but I think that we all have the right to protect our homes. And that has to be done, and it has to be recognized.
Well, if you were at the Harrisburg gun store, you noticed there wasn't much stock.
No, there wasn't. But, boy, he has a collection of bayonets, if you've ever seen those.
I do know the guys over there, you know, and they have a nice little place over there and a good selection. And he, one of those guys, is listening right about now. So I expect to see my phone light up here any minute, and you can't get ammo either. You know, it's interesting because people have such strong opinions about guns. But we'll get back to that in a couple of moments. I want to talk about something else. You know, on the appeals court. I've always kind of thought that the appeals court's process and existence is the admittance that we're all human and we make mistakes.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what we do, is we examine what the trial judge or the administrative agency did, and we make a determination as to whether that particular judge, in ruling on the case, made some errors. And, you know, one of the things that, especially in these times, we have to be very careful about is the inherent bias that exists in the judicial system. We can't let, for example, the good old boys network, where the lawyers go in the back room and they decide the case and then they come out and, you know, the decision has been made, or same with the criminal cases. You know, the public defender goes in the back room and boom, a deal's made. You got to watch out for those things, and you got to protect the people's rights. You got to level the playing field for everybody in the court system. That's our job.
Justice Judy Cates is joining us. Interesting, one of our listeners on the American Monument text line, just texting on the subject that I think that you're talking about here. We need to uphold people's rights, not just protecting the people, but everyone's constitutional rights. And I think that's about individualism in that aspect. But, you know, what does the term legislate from the bench mean to you?
So this is a term that's used to misdirect people into voting for judges, because in the appellate court, you cannot legislate from the bench. The appeals panel sits in panels of 3. So it takes 2 to issue an opinion. So no one judge can legislate from the bench at the appellate level. Now, at the trial court level, yes, a judge could decide that he or she wants to make sure a law is unconstitutional, or the order from the governor, for example, is unconstitutional or against the statutes of the state of Illinois. And that particular judge could then decide on his or her own to make a ruling and make legislation or go contrary to legislation. But you cannot do it at the appellate level. And for people to say that in this kind of race, in the Illinois Supreme Court race, it cannot happen, especially at the Supreme Court level where you need 4 votes out of 7 to issue an opinion. So legislating from the bench might happen at the trial court level, but it cannot happen at the appellate level, and it will not happen at the Supreme Court level.
It's interesting ruling because when I was thinking of this, I mean, you've got a judge says FOID cards are unconstitutional. Is that legislating from the bench, or is that just a good decision? Your thoughts, Justice Gates?
I think that represents that individual's judgment on the issue at the moment the case is argued before him or her. And I'm not saying that's legislating from the bench. I don't know what influences that particular judge. But we know from Illinois Supreme Court cases that the FOID Card Act in Illinois has been held a constitutional exercise of police power.
And this is an important question that's just come in. I'm curious how you feel about this. Some places, Supreme Court judges are appointed. They're not elected. And people say, well, here's the question. How does the judge feel about election over appointments? Elections run the possibility of returning favors, right? And I know you and I both know the Mag Carmier race. I forgot. Most expensive Supreme Court race in Illinois history, I know that, and highly contentious. I understand this, but on the other hand, I think that people need a voice, too. How do you feel about this?
Well, next door to us in Missouri is actually the plan for appointing judges. It's called the Missouri Plan, and a lot of states follow the Missouri Plan, which is an appointment system, not an election system. And what we've found in studies is that the Missouri plan is just as political as the elected system. I believe the people need a voice, but I believe that people need a voice not from the insurance companies who try to corrupt the judges and say, this is how you should vote. I think the people need to vote. Not the corporate greed. We can't be motivated by those kinds of issues. And the State Farm case that you're talking about, as you know, they paid $250 million to settle the corruption trial that arose out of that last Supreme Court race.
Yeah, and that was right out of Williamson County where it started.
Right out of Williamson County. First, they spent approximately $5 to $6 million to put a judge on the bench, and then when they got sued for the corruption, they paid $250 million to settle the case. And you kind of wonder, where did that money come from? Because State Farm's a mutual company. That means people own the company. They pay the premiums. They're supposed to get the dividends. Where'd that money go to? It went to paying off a corruption trial. Now, the people in Williamson County benefited from that. Thank goodness somebody went after them. But they bought a vote back then. We cannot ever let that happen again. We cannot allow that to happen to the people of Southern Illinois.
We had a lot of people texting in this morning, and they've been asking their questions. Now, I want to ask my own questions, personal question, too. At least I think it is. You know, one of the things, I'm an inherently impatient person, and very important decisions come before the Supreme Court. Let's use an example. The decision to change retirement benefits, we all knew it was against the Constitution. We all knew it. Everybody knew it. And then it sets before the Supreme Court for this obscene length of time while things get worse. Why does it take so long to get a Supreme Court decision in crucial times where the clock is ticking and money is being spent? If we could get quicker rulings, we could progress farther in some of these highly contentious political issues.
You know, I totally agree with you. But usually the reason things take so long is because there's discussion going on behind the scenes. Somebody's trying to convince somebody else of the issue. You know, you have seven judges and four of which have to agree in order to get that ruling out. You know, I'm embarrassed to say that we have a case in the appellate court, simple case, not a constitutional dimension, but it's languishing because a judge wrote it one way, somebody else disagreed, it was rewritten, and it's just going around and around because we can't get an agreement. So imagine getting an agreement with seven people.
Yeah.
Having said that, you know, a lot of it depends on how it's presented by the lawyers. You saw in Clay County how quickly it got to the appellate court because it was an injunction. And injunctions are very different than a regular pleading or a regular lawsuit. So a lot of it depends on the framing, and I know I'm getting too technical for your viewers maybe, but a lot of it depends on how it's presented to the court.
That's interesting.
And having, go ahead.
No, that's interesting, because that was my final question for you today, is really there's the letter of the law and there's the intent. But we live in an age of deliberate daily misinterpretation and convolution. And that's the part, your job, I do not envy you by any stretch. I don't want to be in judgment of my fellow human being, really, because I'm not qualified. But the letter and intent of the law is really, that's really where it all stops, isn't it? There's this word, I mean, they're using the word today about leaving your kid at home. And the new legislation says you can leave them home for a reasonable amount of time. Well, what the heck is reasonable?
You know, that is the problem with people who don't understand what's going on in the home, because what is reasonable? I mean, I don't think that the people who pass some of these laws are in touch with what is really going on in our communities, and that's why I need to be on the court, because I do know what's going on in our communities. I've lived in Southern Illinois. I've represented people throughout all of Southern Illinois. And I understand what Southern Illinois needs to come back and be strong again.